This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and Philip Shaw is with us, the CFP and Senior Advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. Hi, Philip. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again, John. Appreciate it.
What's your take on the market? We're down again today. We were down last week. We've been down since January. The trend line is going in that direction. It's sort of a self-inflicted wound, but also one the president even this weekend said that we need to endure. What's your take on what's going on here, Philip?
I think anytime there's uncertainty from the administration, there's always going to be some level of short-term, if nothing else, volatility that comes along with it. I think the long-term market trend is still, you know, that of a bull market. You know, we had a bear market all of 2 years ago, right? 2022, we had a pretty significant bear market. We've been recovering back out of that since. And I've had the long-term argument that, you know, the market doesn't truly care who's in the presidency. The long-term trend will overcome that. And average bear market's about 5 years, including 2 to 3 corrections like we're having.
So you don't think this is recessionary? You don't think we're entering or in a true bear market?
I wouldn't say we're in a true bear market yet. And, you know, those two things, while they usually coincide, don't have to. We don't have to have a recession with a bear market. We don't have to have a bear market with a recession, right? That said, we still had U.S. GDP, you know, increased all through 2024. A recession categorized as, you know, 2 quarters of real GDP growth. Negative GDP growth. I don't know that we're going to see that right now. I would not be surprised to see a general pullback in the economy, though.
Well, now I'm getting mixed signals from you, Philip. It seems to me like the economy's doing well, but we can't expect it to continue to do well much longer. And I presume it's because of the trade tariffs that we're talking about. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, I think in general, there's a lot of uncertainty in people's minds. You know, we saw consumer spending decreased January and February of this year. And some of that you could tie to weather, but a lot of that, I think, ties to just people's general uncertainty of what the world's going to look like. And people are more comfortable when we have, you know, extra savings. And so we have seen that coming through this year is a decrease in spending, an increase in the short-term savings rate. I think reflects just people feeling nervous about where we're headed. Doesn't necessarily mean we're going to enter a recession, but we might see lower growth as well.
Well, so not to belabor the point, but you say people are nervous about the direction we're headed because they think the direction we're headed is the wrong direction. That is, these tariffs are going to increase prices, and that's not going to help people. So that's just not them being nervous. They have a reason for it. What's your thought about that?
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I think that the tariffs are something we've never done before, at least not in living memory. And that comes with a lot of, you know, is this going to be inflationary? Is this going to hurt our relationship with other governments, with other nations? The downside is I don't think at this point we really know what the long term of that is going to be. You know, we've started these tariff conversations, and then we've seen some companies talk about reinvestment back into jobs in U.S. manufacturing. Right. I don't think we truly know what the long term impact is going to be. And that's really what I'm getting at is it's not that people are half of everyone I talk to thinks we're doing fine. And half of everyone I talk to thinks it's all horrible. But I think it's just the uncertainty of we don't know what it's going to look like. Not that it's necessarily terrible, just that we don't know. And if we don't know, we tend to want to be cautious.
So if cars were the example, and maybe they shouldn't be because whatever the tariffs are going to be, they've been relaxed again. But let's just talk about cars for a minute. The cars didn't suddenly become more expensive, but the expectation that they will be has therefore raised the price on the existing stock. So that's people reacting to what the tariffs may bring. But if down the road we find that the tariffs weren't so inflationary, then it won't be so inflationary. You're telling me that we can't be certain that what's happening now is in fact going to lead to higher prices down the road. Is that correct?
Yes. I think what we're seeing right now is a lot of short-term emotional reaction, and that's natural with any change.
We're down 635 on the Dow right now.
I agree. I don't like seeing that either. Believe me, I don't like seeing that either.
Yeah.
I also, you know, we talk about this all the time, but you know, we can't time the market day to day. And the biggest thing I remind everybody, and I remind anyone listening, is, you know, keep the long term goals in mind, because there is no sign out your window that everything's going to be fine. There's no plane that flies by with a banner and says, you know, the volatility's over and everything's going to be okay. You just wake up 3 months later and it turns out that, yeah, you experienced the bottom. And it's usually when things look the worst is usually where the bottom is.
We're talking to Philip Shaw on the Wintrust Business Lunch. He's the chief financial planner. Is that what CFP stands for? Senior advisor at Goldstone Financial Group?
Certified financial planner, but close.
Yeah, well, chief too. Hey, what did you think of that little observation I had based on what you said? And then we went to break. I wanted you to just chime in, and then I'll ask you about some other things. But if the market is down and 3 months from now, what do you know? It's back up again. Things aren't as scary as we thought. We will have seen this as a buying opportunity. What are you suggesting people do with their money right now, Phil?
Yeah, so I was saying, I think the biggest thing is keep your long-term goals in mind. If you have cash on the side, you have a long-term goal, this may be a great buying opportunity. I tend to say don't do everything at once. You know, even if it's statistically the best decision, you know, if we're sliding into this down market and you have extra money to deploy, start putting in, you know, 10% of it once a week until you've invested the extra money. You probably won't buy at the bottom. You probably won't buy at a recent top, but you'll take advantage of the volatility we're seeing.
Yeah.
So if you have extra money, this could be a good buying opportunity.
That's dollar cost averaging. But maybe if I'm at a point where I'm withdrawing money, I'm taking those required minimum deposits, if I'm living off of my money rather than earning my money right now, I can understand why people would be very conservative with that rather than going into the market. What's your thought about that?
Oh, I absolutely agree. This is dependent on where you are in life. And as I would tell anyone I talk to or work with is, you know, you should be structured in your investments to take advantage of what's going to happen regardless of what the market does. You should have, if you're taking required minimum distributions, you should have money set aside to take those so that you're not selling out of the market at bad times. You know, you should still have long-term growth money, even if you're 70 years old, 75 years old into retirement, you should still have some long-term growth money, but you should be invested for where you're at in life.
Yeah. I said deposits, obviously, where distributions we're talking about. This is you capturing your money. What do you think the Fed will or should be doing then in this year right now, Philip?
My expectation, the Fed is going to maintain interest rates for maybe the next 3-4 months at least. They're very much in a wait-and-see pattern right now, so they want to see what's going to happen with tariffs, with inflation. Obviously, we haven't seen any decrease recently in the inflation rate. We're still up at about 3%. And I don't think until that really starts to move, they're going to decrease rates. I think they're going to stay right where they're at.
What's the number you're watching more carefully or closely? The inflation rate, the interest rate, the unemployment rate? What's going to be significant now?
Yeah, we're paying a lot of attention to the overall interest rates. So we're paying attention to what is that 2-year, 10-year treasury yield. You know, right now we have an inversion in the curve, which tells us that, you know, there is less prospects for growth in the long term. But at the same time, there's also an expectation the Fed is going to reduce interest rates. So this isn't necessarily a recession signal the way people traditionally think it is. But it's definitely one that we're keeping a close eye on. the further that spread comes apart, we'll start becoming concerned.
I thought we had reverted to the norm. We have an inversion curve right now, did you say?
We inverted over the weekend.
And what do you think of the 30-year fixed rates right now? They went down last week.
30-year fixed rates are still attractive. I mean, we've been allocating into treasuries quite a bit for a number of our clients, but that wasn't an expectation of a recession or a crash. That's just more, you know, what I'd call prudent financial planning around things like you said, required distributions and living on our money. But it also, on days like today, makes everybody feel quite a bit better.
But if I were going to sell a house right now, I want to get as many buyers through the door as I can. And if mortgage is going to be under 7%, that's better for everybody, right?
If we could get the mortgage rates down, I think a lot of housing inventory would start to open up.
And yet
we've talked about this before, but I think that's going to very much help the inflation situation is when we can finally start opening up housing inventory again.
How does that help inflation?
Well, if we can get lower housing prices and lower mortgage rates that come with them, that helps everybody's pocketbook. It helps you on the interest you're paying on your mortgage. But also, we have a huge amount of people that will not move out of their homes because they have such low fixed rates right now. They want to move. They don't want to stay in their house, but it doesn't make any sense for them to move either. So we have a low housing inventory coupled with high interest rates is just driving up the price of housing for everybody. And you're seeing it in rents comparatively because they're going to charge what they can based on the market.
Well, I wonder if anybody's done a survey, if they've, you know, reached out to all of the people who have a sub 4% mortgage and asked them, what's your number? You know, is it 6%? Is it 5%? Does it have to equal the mortgage you're paying now? What's the number to get you to finally move out? Because as you said, you want to move out. There's that population. They don't want to heat that house anymore. The kids are gone, whatever. What's the number? Do you have any idea what that would be, Philip?
From what I've seen, if it's around, if we had mortgage rates down to about 5%, we would see a lot of inventory open up.
It's the number David Hawker.
I don't think we're ever going to get close to what we had, the 2.5%. Yeah. I've run into like a 2.15 15-year before. I'm like incredibly low rates, but I don't think we'll come close to that again. But if we can get close to what that average was, if we can get down around 5%, a lot of housing inventory will open up.
That's Philip Shaw, CFP, Senior Advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. You can click on goldstonefinancialgroup.com. Nice to talk to you, Philip. Thanks for helping us out today.
Thanks for having me, John.
Let's visit with Jim Dahlke now, Director of Communications at TechNexus Venture Collaborative. He joins us to talk about the tech scene and all that goes with that. Welcome back, Jim.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so Stripe, what is this firm? Why are they in your news today?
Yeah, a company we're watching here in Chicago, Stripe, a large online payments technology firm. They have companies, about half of the Fortune 100 use Stripe to process online payments. And they're making moves here in Chicago. This is a San Francisco-based company, but they have a location here in Chicago, and they're actually doubling their square footage here. So they leased another 44,000 square feet in their building in River North at 350 North Orleans. That's going to give them about 89,000 total square feet. And they actually extended their lease here, too, in the city of Chicago. So interesting news here, a Silicon Valley business doubling down on Chicago. Certainly, as we've seen, many technology companies across the country kind of pause their hiring initiatives or cut back, certainly as artificial intelligence has played a role in some of that. But we're seeing Stripe really take the opportunity to really double down on Chicago. And according to Crane, they have about 60 open positions of that are based here in Chicago that they're looking to hire for. So certainly an interesting company here to watch that's growing both their headcount and their physical square footage here in the city.
Wonder why they came here. Is it just because the real estate's cheap, or do they want to be in Chicago? We talked last week with somebody who was talking to us about the downtown business market and how it's contracting. That is, the available office space has been contracting for a couple of reasons. One of them is that it's going residential or recreational. But there are businesses that are coming back into the city. We heard that last week as well. I wonder what the attraction is, Jim.
Yeah, it's a great question, and they didn't elaborate that in the story in Cranes, but you know, they did note that, you know, the downtown office vacancy rate is at an all-time high of 26.3%. So certainly Stripe is kind of bucking the trend. You know, we at TechNexus, we operate Teamworking by TechNexus, which is a co-working space that occupies three floors of the Civic Opera building. And, you know, a lot of the tenants in our space are really leaning into the hybrid approach. You know, the ability to come into the office two, three, 4 days a week, not necessarily all five, and kind of having that kind of flexible co-working space. So we've seen a lot of companies kind of gravitate towards that, but I think it really depends on the type of business that you're running. Some companies absolutely need to be in the office five mm-hmm. days a week. Mm-hmm. Some need to be in the office too. But I do think that we're kind of seeing a bit of a retreat, certainly from the complete remote work culture to, hey, we got to at least be in the office a few days a week.
I don't know if you said the downtown office occupancy rate. Is it an all-time higher vacancy rate? But it's the vacancy rate we're talking about, that it's 26.3%, right?
That's right, the vacancy rate.
Yeah. Talk to me about Chicago's female founders and what's happening to their funding deals.
Yeah, a story just last week in Chicago, NO is showing that the amount of funding going to female-led startups is on the downward trend. After 3 years of, you know, some modest growth and steady kind of consistent output, the amount of money going to women-led entrepreneurs here in Chicago is down. So in 2021, female entrepreneurs raised about $634 million. That jumps up to $700 million in 2022 and about $653 in 2023. That number for last year was down to $428 million just across 85 deals in Chicago. And looking at the first quarter of this year, the picture does not get any rosier. We're actually behind where we were at this time last year in terms of the amount of money going to female-founded startups. Really across the entire Great Lakes region, which includes Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, along with us here in Illinois, deal counts dropped by nearly 20% year over year for startups led by women. So, you know, this is something that the tech industry has been talking about for a long time. You know, the startups that have a female co-founder just do not raise the funding that their all male counterparts do. And when you look at female-led startups with all women, you know, co-founding teams, those numbers get even bleaker. So, you know, certainly, you know, we're not quite seeing the level of progress you would hope to see for female-founded startups in Chicago.
I don't suppose the DEI rollbacks are going to help that area much either, huh?
Yeah, PitchBook, the group that put this together and just, you know, generally does a great job of kind of tracking venture statistics throughout the country and really the world, did make mention of that. You know, they said sociopolitical tides are shifting with renewed action against DEI and ESG initiatives, which will impact the trajectory of founder demographics in the U.S., the report said. The degree of that remains, you know, uncertain, but, you know, the report said that, you know, an even more demographic split for VC investment remains farther on the horizon. So we're not quite getting to that gender parity in terms of the amount of money that's, you know, kind of going to startups. But part of the issue here is that, you know, these numbers are basically skewed in the sense that they're going, these huge amounts of deals are going to AI firms. So, you know, does your AI startup have a female co-founder? And if not, you know, the numbers are going to look really skewed in one direction because these AI firms are raising hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, sometimes billions of dollars at a time. And so that's certainly kind of changing the makeup of how the data looks at the end of the year.
And there's no push to make sure that women or anybody else that would fall under a DEI umbrella is going to get those positions. And the argument has been of late anyway that it should not necessarily go to anybody under that umbrella. Is that true?
Well, there certainly still remain groups that are working, you know, ardently to make sure that we can kind of close this funding gap. And, you know, I think one thing that we're, you know, certainly seeing is from the, you know, folks that are in this industry is to kind of close that unconscious bias gap and get kind of more women funders into the equation, right? So more women at the venture capital table who are cutting the checks themselves, so they can, you know, identify, you know, other women who are an opportunity to invest in. You know, unfortunately for the history of Silicon Valley and beyond, you know, a lot of men are sort of the decision makers and the check writers, and, you know, they're writing checks into other men. This is part of the unconscious bias of that. And certainly there's an effort, and many in Chicago have been behind this, to get more women at the table on the funding side, which would hopefully lead to, you know, more investments in female entrepreneurs. So, after a couple of years of some modest successes, the trend line is unfortunately heading in the wrong direction.
In the Great Lakes region then, which includes Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, deal count dropped by nearly 20% year over year for startups led by women. We'll have to see how that goes this year. Let's talk a little bit about artificial intelligence. What's the latest on this?
Yeah, fundraise for a Chicago AI startup called Vermilio raised about $16 million. They're a generative AI startup. They're taking an interesting approach. It's really all about safety and ethics and consent in their technology. And they basically work with creators to help make sure that their IP is safeguarded. And they actually recently landed a deal with a leading talent agency way in the West Coast, WME. They are partnering with the Chicago startup to make sure that stars, can protect their IP with generative AI. And so basically they, partner with this Chicago startup and can help, take down content on the internet that is using their name, image, and likeness, against their will. And they can also work with this company to license out, their likeness in generative AI projects and make money on that. So, this is similar to a company that we've actually at TechNexus invested in called ReSpeecher. They're all about fairly incorporating generative AI, especially in Hollywood projects. They worked with the Star Wars franchise to recreate James Earl Jones's voice. But they do that with his consent, right? So I think that's going to be a really, really big piece of generative AI as we move forward. Who are the players that are really focusing on safety and consent and legality? Because certainly when it comes to generative AI, in some respects, we are in the wild, wild west.
I saw a Jimmy Fallon piece that had a basketball team and a basketball coach, Rick Pitino, and his team all singing this song, and their lips are moving and they're singing a song that Jimmy Fallon wrote about St. John's basketball team in the run. And I was watching it and I said to Brenda, this is AI. I'm sure they're not singing the song, but they took video of the men lined up maybe for the national anthem, maybe singing the national anthem, Rick Pitino as well. And then they had them singing the song Jimmy Fallon wrote. I don't know what the laws or rules are, but I thought that was just for laughs. In fact, it was, helping the team. But if you wanted to use that same talent and technology for other purposes, it was on display there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, the speed in which AI's quality is improving is remarkable. I think there was a time, not that long ago, where you could kind of spot an AI-dubbed video kind of a mile away. It looked pretty good, but, there's something not quite right about it. We are very close, if we are not already there, to a future where it is undiscernible where whether this is, an AI-generated piece of content or something that was actually produced and created by human beings. So, we have a long way to go to figure out all of this. But I think what's interesting is companies are really, kind of planting their flag in this space of ethics and consent and all around name, image, and likeness. It's interesting to watch.
Yeah, you can see how that would be a real opportunity for revenue if you're going to protect that for companies or individuals. And so Jim Dahlke's on that, Director of Communications at TechNexus Venture Collaborative. Jim, let's talk next week. Thanks for your thoughts today.
Thanks, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN. And we've got more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Premier League Soccer is coming to Chicago this summer. Chicago is one of three U.S. cities to play host to the second edition of the Premier League Summer Series. Soldier Field will host a doubleheader on July 30th, featuring four Premier League clubs. Manchester United and West Ham United are two of the teams participating. It'll be the first time Chicago has hosted a matchup of Premier League teams. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Thank you. And Joe Maxwell is back on the phone with me.
I am a farmer. I have an ag economics degree as well as a law degree.
Missouri, or Missouri, if you like, is where he farms, and he's also co-founder of Farm Action, a watchdog group that keeps an eye on the ag marketplace, sniffing out what may be corporate shenanigans. In this case, why egg prices are so doggone high. The number one reason?
The avian flu is real.
And the price of eggs should have gone up as a result, but
consumers should not be paying over 130% increase. It should be much less.
And Farm Action blames the big egg companies that control much of the market.
They have taken advantage of that to make excessive profits.
So, as Joe told us last Tuesday here on the Business of Food, Farm Action sent letters to the FTC and the DOJ asking for an investigation. What happened? After I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today, there's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Okay, Farm Action sent that letter to the DOJ asking for an investigation into why eggs are so expensive.
Calling on them to use their subpoena power, their investigative power.
And last Friday, the DOJ announced it will investigate whether egg producers have conspired to raise prices or hold back supply.
We are confident that the actions being taken by DOJ are a result of our analysis of this market. We applaud DOJ for taking a deep dive into these dominant firms and their pricing structure.
How long will that take?
It can take up to a year, but we trust that DOJ will be very diligent, like a dog with a bone.
And he says history has shown that companies under the federal microscope have lowered prices.
That is not an uncommon response, so that everybody kind of breathes a sigh of relief and goes away. And so we really hope DOJ and the people stay at it and get to the bottom of what is happening since the outbreak of the avian flu in 2022.
And maybe, thanks to a nudge from Farm Action, the DOJ's poking around will find something amiss and bring egg prices back to earth. On the food calendar, it's National Blueberry Popover Day and National Pack Your Lunch Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Okay, real quick, here comes St. Patrick's Day. Let's say hello to Grace Fuller, the general manager at City Cruises. Hi, Grace. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, John. How are you?
I'm really good. So St. Patrick's Day is, what's the date of that? The 17th, 16th?
St. Patrick's Day is the 17th, and the River Dying is the 15th this year.
Right. So you guys have the City Cruises, and are you going to be on the river for that?
We are front and center, and Sea Dog's joining the party this year.
Those are the yellow boats that go a little faster. You also do the cruise boats for meals, right, for dinner or lunch?
Yes, we do. Odyssey Chicago River, located right below NBC Tower on the Chicago River, beautifully situated for the festivities, right front and center.
Yeah, I'm looking out my window right now down at that boat. It's beautiful with the glass roof and sides, so you can experience the river while dining inside, food and beverage. I don't suppose you do that on the other ones, huh?
We don't do that on Sea Dog, but we do have temperature-controlled vessels on Lake Michigan as well, right out of Navy Pier.
So then what's the way you suggest we do it? Should tell me what the experience would be like.
We have several options available right now, actually. One is our Sea Dog boats will be on the river this year for the festivities. Tickets are selling very fast, which is a good problem for us.
Yeah.
We also have Odyssey Chicago River, which is totally booked on Saturday, March 15th. However, Sunday, March 16th, we have two Premier Plus Bottomless Mimosa brunch cruises on the dyed green river.
Yeah, the river will still be green, so you can go up and down. But then you can, if you go out on Lake Michigan, they haven't dyed Lake Michigan, although that would be awesome, but it would be very expensive anyway. So you can go out on Lake Michigan, though, and have the dining and tour as well, right?
Yes, we have. On Saturday, we have a premier lunch cruise on Lake Michigan that boards at 11:30 and cruises 12:30 to 2:30. And that is a fantastic cruise with food, drinks, dancing, DJ, the views, and it's looking like a pretty good day.
Yeah, no kidding. And you're indoors and outdoors for that trip as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah. One of my favorite pictures is my family and I on that boat on the lake. It's very breezy, so we're being windblown. We've got little splits of champagne. It was our Christmas card one year, for crying out loud. But then if you need a break from the weather or the wind, you just go inside.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful vessel. So many improvements have been done, and it just looks stunning.
Okay, so how do I sign up? What do you want us to do, Grace?
Just go right over to citycruises.com.
Yeah, citycruises.com. You can register there, see what's available, and it is a fun way to do both the Dying of the River. That boozy brunch is very nice as well. Okay, good luck, Grace. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Grace Fuller is the general manager at citycruises.com.